Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page and turn to the Torah, to the book of Kara, which means to call out. It's been corrupted to Leviticus. So we're in the 23rd chapter up to this point in covering the presentation of matzah, of unleavened bread, of this moed mikre, of this chag, of this celebration to meet with God, to be called out of this world, to be welcomed into His company. We have covered the first six statements that he has made in the 23rd chapter of Kara. As a by way of introduction, as we progress through his statements regarding matzah being the second of three spring mikre leading to Shavuot, the first four of seven mikre were fulfilled in year 4000 Yom, 33 CE in our pagan calendars by Yahusha working in harmony with the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit. And ultimately, God's solution to mankind's dilemma is restricted to the mikre. The mikre alone provide the means to be saved. We are required to know Yahweh, to trust Him, and to rely exclusively on the means that He has provided through this seven-part plan. And matzah is simply the second of seven steps that we are invited to walk in our journey from human corruption and oppression to eternal celebrations in God's presence. And while we are focused today on matzah and have been previously focused on Passover and will turn our attention to Bukkotim, and in the not-too-distant future, we'll also cover seven Sabbaths, Shavuot. Understand that while these are individual celebrations, they are part of a cohesive whole. And when we look at them individually as opposed to cohesively, as a unified plan, as a path from our world to God, we lose sight of their purpose. You know, it's like if you found a doorway and then you saw that there was a pathway leading from that doorway to a home, and you said, I think I'm going to open the doorway, but somewhere between the second and third step, I'm going to go off in a different direction. You're no longer capitalizing on that path that has been paved for you. And that is the nature of these Moed Mikre, of these scheduled invitations for us to meet with God. For those who are listening and wonder why we've moved away from temporarily, Yah's presentation of creation and the stories that he is telling us relative to our existence to these first three Moed Mikre is because we will be celebrating Pesach Passover beginning at sundown tomorrow evening, Tuesday, with unleavened bread being celebrated beginning at sundown on Wednesday of this week, and Bukkotim first fruits being celebrated on Thursday at sundown. So the completed work of the called out festival of unleavened bread by the Maaseh Yahusha, his soul, is considered complete and satisfactory by God in and of itself to remove all corruption from mortal souls, past, present, and future. Now, I do, before we consider this passage, there is in Colossians a statement that Paul makes where he arrogantly says that the sufferings that he is enduring make up for the deficit, they complete the sacrifice of Yahusha. It is stunningly arrogant and stunningly inaccurate. God's view is that no man can work for or contribute to his or her salvation, that God has done everything that is required to save us, and he saved us from death on Pesach, sacrificing his body. He saved us from our sin and separation from him on matzah, sacrificing his soul. This is the next line in Kara. The first, foremost, and primary day, this would be the first, foremost, and primary day of matzah, the chag, the festival feast of unleavened bread, exists as a set-apart and cleansing, a kodesh, invitation to meet and to be called out, a mikra, You shall not engage in any of the work of the business of the heavenly messenger, the Malacha. This is Kara, Leviticus 23:7. Okay, so unleavened bread is not a single day event. The concept of unleavened bread lasts for 7 days. I personally think it begins with the celebration of Pesach, because on Pesach we're asked, encouraged, invited to eat unleavened bread. And that the sacrifice of the Passover lamb begins this celebration of matzah, of removing sin from our mortal nature. And so God is saying that the first day is a special day. It's a day set apart from all others. It's the opposite of ordinary. Now, Yahweh says that his name is Kodesh, set apart. He says that his spirit is set apart. He says that Yahusha is the most set apart. He says that his Sabbath is set apart from other days of the week. And so that's what he's saying here. This is a special day. The first day of matzah, of unleavened bread, is a special day. It is a day that is Kodesh, set apart for cleansing. It is a set apart mikra. A mikra is an occasion for a unified collection of people, a family in this case, to gather together for a specific purpose, which is to celebrate our adoption into God's family, our immorality, our perfection, for us to read and recite his testimony and communicate the news and message associated with it. It is a day that we are called out of this world and welcomed into God's company. He says, you shall not engage in, perform, fashion, accomplish, or produce any of the work, this is the abodah, the deeds done in service to another, of the endeavors of the heavenly messenger, the Malacha, the service of the Malach. The Malach is the spiritual messenger or envoy of God. Now, God has two extraordinarily similar set-apart Kodesh messengers. His spiritual messenger is the set-apart spirit. His corporeal messenger is the Messiah Yahusha. They are both part of Yahweh, set apart from him, but both of them have a specific purpose, and that is serving as messengers and envoys for Yahweh. Part of Yahweh doing his business. In the case of Pesach, it was the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh that accomplished this. In the case of matzah, once again, it is an aspect of the corporeal nature of Yahweh that did this, in the sense of it's not the flesh of Yahusha that made the sacrifice of separation into Sheol on matzah to redeem us, but it was his soul. And then on unleavened bread, on first fruits, you have Yahweh's spirit and Yahusha's soul being reunited as God's envoys to demonstrate to us that he honors his promises, that we can rely on this and all of his mikra. Now, salvation is a gift. It is a byproduct of the covenant. It's one of the places where religious people get so confused. They want to know if you're saved. Well, God has no interest in saving anyone that isn't first a member of his family. You become a member of God's family by embracing the terms and conditions of the covenant. As a byproduct of becoming a member of the covenant family, God saves us. He makes us immortal. He empowers us. He adopts us. He enriches us and helps us grow. But salvation is always a byproduct of the covenant. The covenant itself isn't free. If you want to participate in the covenant, there are 5 terms and conditions which you must meet. And for those who meet those terms and conditions, Yahweh offers 5 benefits. And those 5 benefits come by way of these mikra, with the first 2 benefits of the covenant being provided by Pesach and Matzah, and the third being provided by Bukurim. The first benefit is we become immortal. The second benefit is we become perfect. The third benefit is we become adopted into God's family. So salvation, these aspects of the covenant are free. They're God's gift to us. But to be in a position to avail ourselves of them, we must do something. And that is that we must come to know Yahweh and choose to participate in his covenant by acting upon its five terms and conditions. So it is important that you know that it will do you no good whatsoever to observe Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits if you are not already a member of his family. You don't become a member of God's family by observing Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits, and Shavuot. You become a member of God's family by coming to know Yahweh and acting upon the terms and conditions of his covenant as he laid them out in his Torah. And then you receive the benefits of the covenant by accepting his invitations to party with him, to celebrate with him on these 7 days each year, the first three of which are all going to be celebrated this week. Now, since I have said this now three times, let me reemphasize for those who do not know and to affirm for those that do know what the five terms and conditions are of the covenant. The first of them is God asks us to walk away from our country, from our human family, from the world, if you will. And because Abraham was in Babylon, and God asked him to walk away from Babylon, and Babylon is described at great lengths throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms as the reservoir of the evil associated with religion, politics, militarism, and economic woes, all influenced by man and the adversary. God is asking us first and foremost, before we even endeavor to engage in a relationship with him, to walk away from religion. If you are religious, you cannot benefit from these mikra. If you are religious, you cannot participate in the covenant. There are no religious people in heaven. None. We'll return to this presentation of Yahweh's covenant in a moment and consider the other four requirements to participate in the relationship so you are prepared to capitalize upon matzah in just a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Dayada. We're considering the nature of matzah, which is where God perfects us. It is the day of our salvation. But what God makes quite clear is that we can't avail ourselves of his perfection unless we are first part of his family. And to become part of his family, there are five terms and conditions. There's five things that we must do. We must accept, we must embrace, we must act upon if we wish to become God's children. And there is no other way to have a relationship with God. There's no other way to enter heaven than to participate in the one and only covenant. This is a covenant that has not been renewed, and there will never be a new one. There's only one. It's delineated in the opening book of the Torah. Its terms and conditions and its benefits are presented in the opening book of the Torah in Bereshit Genesis. And the first condition, it's a prerequisite, is to walk away from your country, from politics and from religion, from militarism and economic schemes. If you're a patriot, you're not welcome in God's family. If you're political, you're not welcome in God's family. If you're religious, you are absolutely excluded from God's family. 100% of religious people are excluded from heaven. There is not a single religious person that has ever been welcomed into God's home. The first requirement is to walk away from all Babylonian influences, religion and politics, economic and military schemes. Difficult for most. The second requirement is related to the first. It is to trust and rely upon Yahweh. Now, the way that you come to trust someone is you have to come to know them. It is impossible to trust someone without knowing them. If you do not know them, then all you have is faith. All you have is belief. God didn't say, place your faith in me. He said, trust me. You cannot trust someone unless you first come to know them. The Christian God, the Pauline God, for example, the Mohammedan God, are gods that are manufactured in the image of their messengers. They aren't real. They can't be known. The only real God not only introduces himself, but he proves his legitimacy. He proves his authorship of his Torah, prophets, and Psalms through prophecy. And he only introduces himself in one place, the Torah. If you want to know him, if you want to meet him, you have to read the Torah. And you have to know him before you can trust him. Similarly, you can't rely on what someone is offering until you first come to understand what it is that they're offering. You know, you can believe that the bridge across the chasm will carry you to safety, but unless you actually know how that bridge was built and how it is secured and who designed it and what it was designed to accomplish, you cannot rely on it. God said, the second requirement of participating in the covenant is coming to trust and rely upon him. This requires us to come to know and understand who he is and what he is offering in the Torah. The third requirement for participating in this covenant is to walk to God and become perfect. You see, God is not going to allow rubbish into his home. His home has a doorway that keeps the rubbish, religious and political and patriotic and military rubbish out. And it has a welcome mat that cleans the scum off of those for whom the door has been opened. The doorway is Passover. The welcome mat that cleanses those who cross this threshold is unleavened bread. The result is Bukurim, first fruits, where we are adopted into God's family, welcomed into his home as his children. And so the third requirement is to walk to God and become perfect. There's only one path that we walk in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That one path is this path that begins with the doorway of Pesach, Passover, the threshold of unleavened bread, the third step being Bukurim, first fruits, the fourth step being Shavuah, seven Sabbaths, the prophets of seven. This path goes through trumpets, which is Teruah, where we share the message that we have learned that God has provided. The Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, where we come into the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, so that we are perfectly prepared to camp out with God for all eternity, which is the destination, the seventh step. That's home, Sukkah, shelters. That is the path. It is the only path whereby we are invited to walk into God's presence, to be welcomed home. That's the third requirement for participating in the covenant. The fourth is to observe the covenant, Shamar Bereth, to come to carefully examine and thoughtfully consider every aspect, every word, every jot and tittle that comprises every letter of every word that is in Yah's teaching, his guidance, his Torah. So that we come to understand the covenant, because you can't participate in a relationship unless you know what it's about. Hello, welcome back to Shattering This. We're talking about the terms and conditions of the covenant for participation. The fourth of the five terms and conditions is a very simple one. It says Shamar Bereth. Bereth is the Hebrew term for covenant. It is based upon the Hebrew word Be'eth. Be'eth means family and home. It happens to be the second letter in the Hebrew alphabet that actually is drawn to depict a home. And so it's a home, by the way, with a singular entrance. So God is saying here that he wants us to shamar, which is the Hebrew word for observe, his bereth, which is a concept based upon family and home. It is a relationship that is modeled around family and home. That's what bereth means, based upon the Hebrew word for family and home, be'eth. Now, to observe, what does that mean? I mean, the instruction is really simple. Shamar bereth. Shamar is a verb. It means to observe. In a lot of corrupt English translations, you will see shamar be changed rather than translated as keep. And keep then is assumed to mean to obey, to do to obey. But that's not what shamar means at all. Shamar means to observe. It's to use your faculty of sight to closely examine and carefully consider. It's a derivative, if you will, of the two gifts that God provided for animals. To the first being a nephesh soul, which provides our consciousness, our ability to observe and react to our environment. And our nephesh, which is our conscience, which enables us to exercise good judgment based upon what we have observed so that we respond appropriately. And so shamar is the source of information that comes into the system that enables us to exercise our nephesh, awareness, and nesama, conscience, or good judgment. And it's either, it's like kind of a computer in a sense that if you put in bad data, you're going to get bad results. So God is saying, I not only want you to be observant so that you take in this information, but I want to make sure that the information you take in is the right information. I want you to focus your observations on everything I had to say about the covenant. And when you do, you realize that it has five terms and conditions, and it has five benefits, and that it requires us to act to engage in this relationship. It's not free. No relationship is free. No relationship worth anything enables one party to do nothing and the other party to do everything. We're back to the economic system that was just foisted on Cyprus. The majority of people don't do squat. That doesn't work in a relationship. Both parties have to participate for it to be valuable. And you can't have a relationship with a... Well, you can have one. Look at the football player, the Mormon football player that went to the Catholic school, Notre Dame, that had for many months a relationship with a fictitious person. Okay, so people, in religious people all the time, have relationships with fictitious gods. But God is only interested in a genuine relationship, which means you've got to come to know him, and you've got to know what he's offering by way of this covenant, and you've got to process that information so that you understand it and then respond to it based upon what you've learned. Shamar Bereth. Lastly, the fifth requirement for participation in the covenant is that husbands and wives who become fathers and mothers, as they bear children and raise them, are asked to circumcise their sons so that their sons understand and they understand that that our primary responsibility as parents is to raise our children so that they remember God's covenant, so that they focus on God's covenant, so that our children become God's children. Those are the five requirements. The five benefits are provided by the first four Moed Mikre: immortality through Pesach, perfection through Matzah, adoption through Bukurim, enrichment and empowerment through the promise of seven sevens. That's the message that we are considering here. And so God just said the first and foremost, the primary day, the Rishon, exists as Haya. Haya is the basis of Yahweh's name. Exists as a set-apart and cleansing Kodesh. Perhaps the most important concept to understand relative to Yahweh is Kodesh, that God is asking us to set ourselves apart from this world, that is to walk away from Babylon, from our country, from religion and politics, so that we can be cleansed and set apart unto him and participate in his family. Well, the mikre of matzah is Kodesh. It is a part of that being set apart. And he says, you shall not engage in any of the work of the business of the heavenly messenger. This is where Paul went wrong. Paul said that, you know, his ongoing suffering completed the work of the heavenly messenger. God is saying, no, 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 no. You don't do anything in this regard. Your salvation is completely up to me. I'm doing 100% of the work. I'm doing everything that is required. I don't want you to contribute to that. You contribute to the relationship, and I'll make your salvation possible. So Salvation is a gift. It is a byproduct of this covenant. It was paid for and delivered by Yahweh, manifest in human form. It is a direct result of the work of Yahweh and his, what he performed on the Mikra of Pesach and Matzah, where his body served as the Passover lamb and his soul was damned, thereby separated into Sheol on our behalf. Since it is critical to our salvation, it bears repeating. Mikra, the title that Yahweh chose to describe his plan of salvation, is based upon the Hebrew verb kara, a verb which conveys the act of calling someone out to read and recite a message. It tells us that we are to proclaim the news, to convey the essential meaning behind that information or message, and to issue a summons and an invitation. Kara means to call out by name so as to be chosen, therefore encountering and meeting God in a personal way. As such, the scriptural title that Yahweh's path to paradise, it describes how God wants us to celebrate each step along the way. You want to understand how do you observe Passover? Come to understand the verb that forms the basis of the title that Yah used to describe each of these seven steps. God wants to call us out of this world, inviting us to meet with him at a time where we read and recite his testimony and are thereby welcomed into his company. That's what Kara, the basis of Mikra, tells us. It is as simple as understanding the words themselves, which is the reason that Yahusha said that it is the details of these words that form the essence of the Torah and its enduring promise. It's why it is always relevant. And to that end, those who are unaware of, those who elect to ignore, those who choose to be hostile to Yah's plan of salvation, as it is embodied in the seven Mikra, a term related to Mikreth, which describes an unforeseen meaning at the end of life, which designates the fate or destiny of those who do not choose to answer God's summons, is that they will cease to exist. It should be noted that Yahweh used Kodesh to further define the purpose of this Mikra. It reminds us that this day exists to set us apart from the world and unto God for the purpose of cleansing and purifying us. Worth noting in this regard, Kodesh is the adjective God selected to describe his spirit. It is the Ruach Kodesh, or set-apart spirit. He also refers to his son, to the Messiah Yahusha, as the Kodesh Kodesh, or most set-apart. We should also be cognizant of the fact that the Torah's most important title, Mikra, found in the plural, Mikrei, meaning called out assembly, an invitation to be called out and to meet, has a direct and equally essential counterpart in Greek. Yeah, I shouldn't say equally essential. It is an interesting counterpart, but essential, no. The essential term is mikra, and in the plural, mikrae. But it does have a counterpart in Greek that is interesting, and that counterpart is ekklesia. Ekklesia is the Greek word for to call out, and ek, or to call, I should say, is what ekklesia means, to call, and ek means out. Now, if English translations had simply and accurately translated mikra as invitations to be called out and to meet with God, and they had not changed ecclesia to the pagan concept of church, which is based upon circles and church, who is the daughter, the pagan daughter or goddess of the sun in the Teutonic religion. If man had simply translated both terms accurately, then there would be no confusion. It would be known for absolute certain that the ecclesia is based entirely on the mikra. and that there is a direct link between the ecclesia and the mikra, that these things are connected. Yahweh has mikra. The mikra enable us to be saved once we are part of his family. The mikra are the process that provide the benefits for being part of God's family. So if you are one of the many people who are unfamiliar with the term ekklesia in Greek, which means to be called out, and mikra in Hebrew, which means to be called out, understand that properly translating them and referencing them is essential to your understanding. Every English Bible replaced the meaning of the Hebrew word all of the 115 times that it appears, and they misrepresented the Greek word all 119 times it appears, changing the meaning of both so the vast majority of people would not understand the connection between the two. God did not create an institution. He did not create a building. He does not have a church. But he does have seven annual mikrae. And if you will observe them, after first coming to know who God is and embracing the terms and conditions of his covenant, then you will be part of his family. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. That passage that we just read from Yahweh, the first and foremost, the primary day, exists as a set apart and cleansing invitation to meet and to be called out. You should not engage in any of the work of the business of the heavenly envoy. That last word was malacha. It was not the ordinary Hebrew word for work, which is ma'aseh. As you consider the title that Yahusha had, it is ma'aseh Yah. That means the work of Yah. Ma'aseh Yah is the work of Yahweh. Well, malacha is actually a derivative of malak. In fact, it is the feminine version of malak. And you might say, well, what is malak? Malak in throughout scripture is the Hebrew word for spiritual messenger. Those that are mistakenly called angels by transliterating the Greek agelos, which means messenger, are actually malak. The Hebrew concept for the spiritual messengers of Yahweh is malak. Malaka is the feminine of malak. It's not the Hebrew word ma'aseh, which is the work of the ordinary endeavors, if you will, of men and of God. Malaka is the service of the heavenly messenger. There's no mistaking that Malaka is based on Malak, which is Yahweh's envoy, his representative, his heavenly messenger, a supernatural being who proclaims God's message. A Malak is a theophany, defined as a visible manifestation of God, the tangible and corporeal representation of divinity. And what's interesting is that Yahusha, as a corporeal individual, is really set apart from Yahweh. The things that made Yahusha Yahweh, at least part of Yahweh, is his soul. And, of course, more important than that, is the spirit. That's why Yahusha said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you departed from me when the spirit, which is the feminine manifestation of God's nature, left? And so the very thing that made the Messiah Yahusha a representation of God is this set-apart spirit, this Malaka. And in this case, the Malak is Yahusha. The Malaka is the set-apart spirit. So Yahusha is unleavened, without sin, and therefore he alone was qualified to unleaven our souls. This profound truth is pervasive throughout Yahweh's and Yahusha's testimony. But to appreciate this truth, you have to seek out the full meaning of the words that Yahweh communicated to Moshe. That doesn't mean you have to understand Hebrew. You don't actually have to understand Hebrew. We're having a conversation in English. Everyone listening here is not required to understand Hebrew to benefit from this education. Now, somebody along the way does have to look at the Hebrew words, but you can even do that in English. I think in English, I communicate in English, I study Hebrew. How do you do that? Lexicons, dictionaries, interlinears. The tools are ubiquitous. They're free online. You can buy them at bookstores. You can even buy electronic tools that electronically connect interlinears to the lexicons. And all you have to do is do your homework. Be observant. Closely examine. Look up the word. Look up Malacca. See what Malacca is based on, which is Malak. See what Malak means. See how it differs from Maaseh. See where Maaseh is also used. And when you do these kinds of things, you can be reading English, you can be thinking in English, you can be communicating in English, and yet you will understand the Hebrew, the message that God is prevailing here, providing for us here, I should say, the message that prevails that God is providing for us. So that is why God used Malacca. On the seventh day, God, having completed his Malacca, the work that he performed spiritually by way of relationship, he had fashioned and accomplished. And on the seventh day, he rested from all his Malacca, which relationally he had prepared and produced. The spiritual work of Yahweh is his Malacca. And so what God is saying here in his presentation of the Mikra of Matzah is that I've done everything that is required to save you. You ought not be adding to or contributing to the work that I have done on your behalf. Salvation is a gift. Once you participate in my covenant, it is yours. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Mess.